Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Kerala has resolved to escape through the tunnels beneath the abbey before it is taken by Kelisandra's forces. Chapter 38.
Times like this, Wick panted as he slumped against the preservatory's outer wall next to Kerala and Allie. I'm reminded of home. Feels like I've run from Harborside to the Duke's estate and back.
Trust me, Kerala told him, the slopes of Kohane are a lot steeper than this. Of course, we weren't bringing all these supplies up the hill either. She glanced at Allie. I imagine the run from Harborside is much the same from the south bank. Have you ever done it?
Allie nodded slowly.
When I was 16, Ambrose got it into his head that he needed a new sword, and nothing would do for him but a blazon.
Wick made a low whistle.
Aye, nothing but the best for my brother, Allie continued. Well, the most expensive anyway. And, of course, Blazon's shop is in Venderel, so you've got to add the costs of travel and shipping into that. Father offered to commission a blade from Talloy instead.
This brought a nod of agreement from Wick.
Talloy's just as good as Blazon, and his shop's in Channelside.
That's what my father tried to explain to him. Spend a coin in Kohane, son, and it'll come back to you with friends. But, of course, Ambrose wouldn't hear of it. It had to be a Blazon. So father told him to spend his own money on it. Ambrose didn't like that either. So one day he makes a bet with me that I couldn't make the run from Harborside to our estate in one go. The loser commissions a blazon for the winner.
With a weary grin, Allie pointed to the rapier that lay atop the pile of their possessions. Wick gasped, looking at the blade with new interest as Allie laughed.
I've done the run a few times since, but every time I climb into one of our coaches, I say a little prayer of thanks to the triad.
She drew in a long, yawning breath.
Maybe I should start doing that run again when we get back. I'm out of shape.
You're doing fine, Kerala told her. We'll just take another minute or so to catch our breath, then get back to work.
The work would go faster if some of the other scholars helped, Allie grumbled.
The next youngest guest after us is at least 50, Kerala explained. I doubt many of the scholars could manage one trip up from the dining hall, let alone a day of it. Besides, the monks can use their help logging and sorting the inventory of everything that's brought up.
I noticed that's what Caius is doing. I wouldn't have thought he'd let himself be considered too old and weak to do the heavy lifting. That man carries enough pride for 10. Used to think all Sabrians were like that until I met Benato.
Benato didn't have any pride?
Oh, he did, but only enough for 3.
Allie paused, making a wordless growl of frustration.
It's getting dark. You'd think that bitch would have attacked by now.
True, Kerala murmured, looking up at the darkening sky. It was clear, only a few wisps of cloud crossing the half-moon.
Good conditions for seeing, she thought sadly, remembering Brother Hallam. He'd be rubbing his hands in anticipation for a night like this. And it's a good one for me as well, enough light for me to lead us away from the camp. Just a little more time to wait before it's fully dark.
Are you listening to me? Allie asked.
Huh?
I said maybe you could volunteer to be the abbot's spyglass again and get a look at what Kelisandra's up to. Wouldn't think you'd be deaf with ears like that.
Kerala shrugged off the insult. Allie was too tired to deliver it with any real venom.
I tried a few hours ago, even offered to climb up to the observatory for a better view, but I wasn't able to speak to the abbot. They told me he's too busy.
She frowned.
Did you notice the equipment they were bringing down to the middle gate from the preservatory?
Aye, Wick replied. Seems funny when we've been asked to bring everything from Midgate up here.
Kerala nodded.
Whatever they're working on, it's taking up all the abbot's time. Anyway, I was told that they've already posted someone up on the observatory, and Hallam's telescopes are as good or better than anything the Sabrians make.
Really? Allie said, perking up. Wish I'd known that before.
Why?
You have any idea how much imported Sabrian telescopes cost? I could have copied the designs to make new scopes in Kohane. Even charging half the price of the Sabrian scopes, we'd make a killing.
She smiled wistfully at the imagined profit,
then noticed Wick and Carla's expressions.
There's always time for business.
Another of your father's sayings? Carla asked.
Aye, Allie replied. Well, seems clear the monks won't tell us what's going on, so let's ask someone else. Where's that puppy dog of yours?
Carla stared at her for a moment, then realized who Allie meant. Jordan?
Aye, Allie replied. The monks are running him and the older kids around as messengers. Like as not he'll know more than we do.
Good point, Carla replied, keeping a smile off her face. It was time to keep Jordan close by anyway.
Wick, take a circuit around Highgate, and if you see Jordan, send him over. And check on Grievous, she added, as the guard got stiffly to his feet.
Aye, mistress, Wick said, throwing her a salute. I'll let him know we have his gear from the dormitory as well.
Carla watched the guard trot away, then turned to see Allie lifting the flap of Grievous's bag.
Allie, you know his map's not in there.
No, but he does have this, the Fane heiress said with a grin, pulling out a slender book bound in leather.
Put that back, Carla said, reaching for it.
Allie fended Carla off with one hand while she read the cover, mouthing the Sabrian words embossed there.
Two pieces of steel, she translated.
Then she smiled in sudden surprise.
Well, well, wouldn't have expected to find this in Caius's bag.
What is it? Carla asked.
A book written by Tiberius Strabo, Allie replied, holding the cover up for Carla to see. Clegg told me you found out that was old Rex's original name.
Curiosity overcoming indignation, Carla took the book from Allie and started paging through it.
It's a book of poetry. Grievous mentioned once that Strabo was a poet, but I didn't realize he'd been published.
She paused, recalling something Grievous had said earlier today when he had learned his blades had been taken.
You know, I think this title probably translates as Two Slender Strips of Steel.
If you like, Allie sniffed, but this is really something. I'd heard that when old Rex was killed, the Sabrians got rid of everything with his old name on it. If anyone had learned that Caius kept this, oh, what a scandal that would have been.
But Grievous is the one who killed Rex, Carla objected. You'd think the Sabrians would give him some leeway.
Allie shook her head.
No, he'd be held to the highest standard of all.
I'll defer to your expertise in matters of scandal, Carla said with a smile, which Allie accepted with a mocking nod. Remembering a trick Galen had taught her, she held the book loosely, letting it fall open on its own to see which page Grievous had most frequently turned to. The poem's title was a match to the cover, Two Slender Strips of Steel. Now she understood why Drusus had been so offended at Grievous's words. She flipped through the pages once more, preparing to return the book to Grievous's pack, when something caught her eye, a piece of handwritten text on the inside cover.
What's that? Allie asked, leaning over to see.
It's a message. The two of them puzzled over the Sabrian words for a moment. Fraterna fair, Carla read aloud. May these words inspire you as they did me. And it's signed with the letter G.
Oh, Allie sighed with a frown. I was hoping it had been signed by Strabo himself. The book's value would have increased tenfold. So, Fraterna fair, is that a name?
A nickname, perhaps, Carla said. The first part of this word means brother. There's another term, Fraterna bellum, brother in battle, which Sabrians use for folk who fought side by side through a tough fight.
Like us? Allie asked, her eyes sparkling with amusement at Carla's startled reaction. So, fraternal fair would mean a different sort of brotherhood than fair. That means iron, doesn't it?
I think so, Carla replied. I guess the G here stands for Grievous. So, it's a book he gave to someone else?
Why does he have it now?
Perhaps it's someone who died, Allie offered, and he took the book back to remember them. His wife, perhaps.
I don't know, Carla said, paging through the book once more. These don't seem like love poems to me. I keep seeing words like duty and honor.
She smirked. Maybe to a Sabrian, those are love poems.
Allie laughed.
Oh, no. When you read a Sabrian love poem, you know exactly what you're reading. They're full of things like, my lover's eyes are as deep and dark as the sea at midnight. How I long to drown myself in them. She shook her head, still chuckling. Sounds better in Sabrian.
Well, I think we've invaded his privacy long enough, don't you? Kerla said, finally putting the book back.
Allie did not object, watching Kerla with a thoughtful expression.
I noticed that Wick saluted you before, Allie said. So you've actually been commissioned as an officer.
I'm the Duke's left hand now. Seeing a flicker of pain cross Allie's face, Kerla sighed.
Allie, listen to me. Tesca and I were never lovers, and we weren't going to be.
Allie studied her for a moment, then looked away.
How did he die, exactly? Were you there?
I didn't see it myself, Kerla confessed. Sidois attacked the Cutlass, but we managed to fire one good broadside that crippled his ship. Unfortunately, he was too close and collided with us, and as the Lee Rouge sank, she was pulling the Cutlass down with her. Tesca and Wick went aboard the Lee Rouge to buy time for us to cut ourselves free, and he didn't get back aboard in time.
Allie's eyes narrowed.
The way you describe it, you'd think there was no magic involved.
She stared into Kerla's eyes, daring her to lie.
Clegg told me about that as well.
Of course he did, Kerla grumbled. Yes, there was magic involved. Sidois's strategy was to attack our sails and leave us dead in the water. I used magic to repair the sails, which helped us keep our distance, but the Lee Rouge had the edge in speed, and Sidois wouldn't back off. So Tesca had the idea to try something bigger.
Using magic to make the cannon fire true, Allie went on, which unleashed some sort of curse that nearly destroyed both ships.
Yes, Kerla finished. Allie regarded her more warily now. It was clear that she hadn't wanted to believe Clegg's report. Kerla wondered how much gruesome detail the old cook had used to embellish his story. Not that the truth needed much embellishment, she thought.
Did Tesca say anything before? Allie began, changing the subject. Before he...
He asked Grievous to tell me the tale of Morellus. Do you know it?
Morellus, Allie said. You know, Tesca mentioned that name once while we were on Narlos. We were in a nasty spot, weren't sure we could cut our way out of it, and he said it was a pity there'd be no one to hear the tale of Morellus.
She shook her head, smiling.
Didn't know what in the hells he was talking about. Typical man. He's puffing himself up to make a last stand, take as many of Tanner's boys down with us as he could. But while he's doing that, I was the one who found the trap door in the floor. Shoved him through it before they swarmed us, and we got away clean.
She sighed.
I never did ask him who Morellus was.
It's a Sabrian story that tells of an Agentes who sacrifices himself to save his master, Kerla told her. I think the Agenti consider it a collective eulogy.
So he knew he wasn't coming back, Allie said. I suppose it's the way he would have wanted to go out.
I think you're right, Kerla said. Allie nodded, staring blankly ahead.
Right. That's that, then.
For a time, the two women sat in silence, leaning against the wall as night fell and the monks began to light the lamps along the path from the preservatory to the gatehouse. Kerla watched the faces of the monks fade in and out of the shadows as they moved past the lamps, then realized that one of those faces had a wide splint across his nose. She got to her feet as Jordan trotted up to them.
How are you doing?
A little tired, the youth replied, but that's no different than anyone else. Your soldier, Wick, said you wanted to see me.
Have you heard anything about what's happening out there?
Some, Jordan replied. Commander Fletcher's put lookouts atop the Lowgate, but they've been looking out into the grounds around the Abbey, not back at us.
That's odd, Allie commented, getting to her feet. Has she called off the attack on us, then?
No, Jordan said, looking worried. She's had her people use the tools from the smith and carpenter's workshops to take apart the stable. They've removed the roof and several of the larger support posts. That's what she's been doing all day.
Why? Kerla asked.
The abbot thinks she's going to use the posts to ram the gate, and she'll use the roof as a shield against crossbows or the lamp oil the monks have set up on the gatehouse.
I've also heard she's making ladders to assault the wall in several places.
Kerala felt a growing sense of dread. I've no experience with sieges, but I don't like the sound of that. So, where's Wick and Captain Grievous?
They're getting food. Wick said he'd bring some here for you shortly.
All right. What happens now?
When the attack begins, Highgate will be closed to everyone except those defending Middlegate. You and the other guests of the Abbey will go to the infirmary to help with the wounded.
What about you?
The children are to be brought to the infirmary as well. That's my job.
Kerala nodded, realizing she should have anticipated this. Jordan was the oldest of the Abbey's children and the one the others looked to for leadership. It was only natural he would be placed in charge of them. But she could see the silent question on his face, the anguish at the thought of leaving them behind to face Kelisandra's wrath.
All right, stick with that plan for now. We'll find you in the infirmary.
Jordan gave her a worried smile and left. Allie watched him depart with an amused glint in her eye.
What is it about that boy? Clegg said you never stopped talking about him. You were always watching to see where he was.
She shrugged.
He's got away with people, I'll grant you that, but I don't see what there is to fancy about him.
I could say the same thing to you about Teska, Kerala replied, drawing Allie's attention back to her.
Then those eyes of yours aren't half as good as everyone says, Allie scoffed. It wasn't Teska's hair or his eyes. It was the way he moved, the way he fought.
The way he read Sabrian love poetry, Kerala guessed. Allie burst out laughing.
No, he couldn't get half the words out without blushing redder than a sunset.
Kerala started laughing, too.
He was trying to be so serious, Allie gasped, like he was reciting a passage for class. And he was so nervous. His hands shook so badly, I thought he'd drop the book.
Their laughter went on for a time, slowly subsiding.
No, it was all about the way he moved, Allie sighed. Watching him was like listening to music.
She looked at Kerala and shook her head.
We've each our own tastes, I suppose, but I'm surprised yours run toward Jordan. If I didn't know better, I'd say you were planning to take him with us.
I am, Kerala told her, enjoying the startled look on Allie's face. But it's not what you think. Jordan's our guide. He knows the way out of the Abbey, and his price for showing it to us is to take him along when we leave.
That's all he wanted?
Allie shook her head, sighing.
Secrets are usually a seller's market. He could have set a much higher price. Ah, well, if someone's willing to sell themselves short, I'm not one to talk them out of it.
She glanced past Kerala's shoulder.
Your soldier's back, and he's brought Caius with him.
Kerala turned to see the two men approaching, Wick carrying a sack over his shoulder.
Fruit and bread, mistress, he said, setting the sack down. The monk said there's no point trying to keep food that will spoil soon, so we should eat our fill.
Good thinking, Kerala said, reaching into the bag. Selecting two apples, she tossed one to Allie.
Captain, how has your day been?
Long, Grievous said wearily, kneeling down next to his pack and looking over its contents. But we have been given a respite, so I thought I would see how you are doing. I must say that I am impressed at the discipline shown by the monks. There is far less confusion and panic among them than I normally see in civilians threatened by war.
Well, they practice for this, Wick said. Have a drill every 6 months, in fact.
He paused, looking defensive as Kerala, Grievous, and Allie stared at him.
Well, you were always telling me to ask the monks questions, mistress.
No need to apologize, Wick. I'm glad you did.
She told him what Jordan had said about Kelisandra's plan.
You've been looking into the Abbey's defenses. Do you think the monks can hold it?
Wick pursed his lips, thinking,
Hard to say, mistress. The captain's right. The monks aren't panicking or running around all confused, which is a good thing. And this place was built to hold off an army, but it's too big for the number of folk that live here. The ram sounds bad enough, but it's the ladders that worry me the most. With those spreading the defenses out, I'm not sure the monks have the numbers to hold the wall everywhere.
All right, Kerala said, coming to a decision. Captain, this morning you said something about deciding where your duty lies. Grievous raised his head, regarding her. And I said we were leaving in 5 days, but things have changed. We're leaving tonight,
and I need to know what you intend to do. If you've chosen to join your countrymen and stay here with the monks, I'll understand.
But if I have, then this is where we part, Grievous replied, understanding her meaning.
Very well. I shall accompany you.
The speed of his answer surprised everyone.
You're leaving the maps? Ali asked.
If the Abbey withstands the assault, the maps will still be here for me to see at a later date, Grievous replied. And while the monks might repel this siege, this place will not protect me from your family forever once they learn I am here, will it?
Ali shrugged, sidestepping the question.
What surprises me, she said, turning to Kerla, is why you're willing to leave him here. He's the whole reason you came to this place. Or, she paused, her eyes narrowing, is he? Speculate on that all you like, Kerla said, but I'm calling in that favor you owe me now. We work together until we get to Maipur and go our separate ways, and until that time, you will not act upon anything you may discover about why the Duke sent us here. Are we clear?
Ask Crystal, Ali said, one corner of her mouth curling into a smile.
Oh, this must be important for you to call that in so soon. I expected you to dangle me on the hook for weeks at least.
Kerla didn't reply.
Wick, when Kelisandra begins her attack, she's going to have to commit everything she has to ensure it works, correct?
I can't see any reason she wouldn't, mistress, he replied. Food, water, supplies, everything she needs is on our side of the wall. It won't be long before her people start to drop from thirst, so she can't afford to hold anything back.
Then that means the campsite should be mostly empty, Kerla said, coming to a decision. When the battle begins, that's when we'll make our move.
And what is this move? Grievous asked. I have pledged to follow you, but I would prefer not to do so blindly.
There is a network of tunnels below us, Kerla explained, channels once used by the underground river. We'll use them to go below the abbey walls and come up through the well next to the farmhouse and escape down the road to Maipur.
The well? Ali said. There's a secret entrance to the abbey in the well. That's news worth a bit of coin.
And you can be sure I'll send word back to the abbot about it once all this is over so he can seal it off, Kerla promised.
Which suggests that the abbot doesn't know about it, Ali said, gleefully pouncing on the conclusion.
So how is it you know?
I've said all I'm saying, Kerla told her. Eat your fill. We'll save the rest for the trip down the road.
Ali sighed in mock exasperation.
Yes, mother.
For a few minutes, they ate in silence.
You know, Ali commented between bites of her apple, just had a thought. In a place this big, there's got to be an old cannon somewhere gathering dust. We clean it out, set it up, then you do your magic on it so it fires properly, and this whole mess would be over at once. We wouldn't have to sneak out of here at all.
First of all, even if the monks had a cannon, Kerla said, which I seriously doubt, it's not the cannon I need to affect, it's the gunpowder.
Oh, and you don't think the monks could make some? It's not as if they don't have the supplies and the equipment.
Ali patted the wall of the preservatory behind her.
With all the books and papers they keep here, surely there's a formula for gunpowder tucked away.
Wick brightened at that, glancing at Grievous. They might even have a copy of the formula your people use.
Highly unlikely, Grievous said with a confident shrug.
Actually, Caius is probably right, Ali sighed. The Trellian formula is one of the Empire's most carefully guarded secrets. I should know. My father's tried to get his hands on a copy for years.
Kerla looked up.
Trellian?
She is referring to Galena Trellia, more commonly known as Trellia the Elder, Grievous explained, one of the Empire's greatest scholars. It was she who perfected the Imperial formula. 50 years after her death, as an honor to her family, her remains were exhumed so that they could receive the Tactus Arus.
Isn't that where the Emperor touches you? Wick asked, suddenly looking ill. You're saying they dug up her bones so the Emperor could...
With his naked hand, Grievous said with a smile, amused at Wick's discomfort. He paused, frowning.
Ah, my mistake.
It was her naked hand. The emperor at that time was Yondra the Third, not her son Yondris the Second. You do not understand how great an honor this was, Master Tan. I have read that all of Trelia's lineage was in attendance, including her granddaughter, Ordavia Trelia, a genius in her own right who made great contributions to astronomy and mathematics. She is generally referred to as Trelia the Younger, to distinguish her from her grandsire.
Oh, that's why he was so angry, Ali said with a dawning smile. One time my father paid good money for a copy of Trelia's work. He really thought he'd found someone to sell him the formula, made all these smuggling arrangements, took a year of planning. When the book arrived, it said Trelia on the spine, but it was full of charts of the southern constellations. Didn't have a single thing to say about alchemy or gunpowder anywhere. She laughed. Father was fit to burst for a month after that.
Well, he wanted a book by Trelia. He got one, Wick said. Remind you of anything, Captain? 5 darts, 5 bullseyes?
What? What's so funny? Ali demanded as Grievous burst out laughing. Kerla, tell me what they're laughing about. Kerla?
The laughter died away as all three turned to see Kerla lost in thought.
Mistress? Wick asked. What's wrong?
She looked up at them. Drusus, he's been conducting secret alchemical experiments in the tunnels beneath the abbey. Captain, you remember that morning when you thought I smelled of smoke? That was after I saw him down there. And you smelled that smoke on him again today.
Yes, Grievous replied. Clearly, his experiments continue. Why?
Because when I was watching him that night, he said something about retracing Trelia's course. It's gunpowder. That's what he's been working on.
Wait, Ali objected. That doesn't make any sense. Drusus was sent here by Livia Mauritius. You'd think the fleet captain of Nauticus would already have all the gunpowder she could want.
And why come all the way up here to experiment with it? Wick asked. The stuff works only half the time at best these days.
Unless, Grievous replied, someone develops a new formula.
He gave a resigned sigh as the others all turned to look at him.
During the battle with Sidwa, when the cannon misfired, the smoke that billowed from them was purple. But to my experience, misfires have always produced green smoke, and I asked the Agentis about this. He pointed out that the powder used in the freeze comes from a northern formula, while Imperial gunpowder uses the Trellian formula. He surmised that these were different enough for them to misfire in different ways. In that moment, I realized that if these two formulae produce different results, then it might be possible to devise a third formula, one that is not affected by magic, and so will not misfire at all. He paused. I now believe that Livia Mauritius has formed the same theory, and she has sent Drusus here to test it.
Careless blood ran cold.
Why didn't you tell me about this before? She demanded.
I am no alchemist, Grievous explained. The theory I came up with on the Cutlass was idle speculation, nothing more.
I'm sorry, Caius, Careless said. I'm not accusing you of lying to me, but I don't think you're telling me everything. You always see the big picture. You realize the implications of my ability to affect gunpowder before I did, and even I can see that this theory of yours is no idle speculation.
Exactly, Ali chimed in. A new form of gunpowder that works in the freeze or on the mainland.
She gave a low whistle. You wouldn't need Rex's treasure if you were the one who found the formula for that.
Assuming you lived long enough to spend the money, Wick said. For everyone that might pay you for the formula, there's 2 that would rather see you dead than let their enemies get it.
Yes, Grievous said. An idle speculation on my part, one that I could not develop on my own. But to share that speculation with anyone else could lead to their death or the outbreak of war. My conscience is heavy enough that I would not burden it further through casual conversation.
He paused, and I did not wish even rumor of this possibility to reach the Empire.
Why? Ali asked. Coming back to the Empire with information like that would restore your reputation, wouldn't it?
Grievous gave her a flat look.
Perhaps, assuming that I was able to develop such a formula, but the price would be my honor. I have sworn to discover the true fate of the Conor Audax and those who sailed with her. If the Freeze were absorbed into the Empire, any clues left behind would be swept away by the tides of war.
That's why you didn't share your theory with me, Kerla said. You knew I'd have to tell the Duke and Galen about it, and they certainly would start trying to find the formula themselves. You're trying to preserve the status quo so you can continue your quest.
Are you angry? Grievous asked.
Kerla rubbed her eyes. Of course, but it's not as if I haven't kept things from you at need. Fair's fair. You realize that I will be talking to the Duke about this when I get back, though.
And I'll be talking to my father, Allie said. Now we're racing after two treasures at once.
Won't matter if Livia Mauritius gets the formula first, Wick said. No secret what she'll do if she gets it, is there?
He looked at Grievous.
Would conquering the Freeze be enough for your Emperor to take his glove off for her?
Perhaps, the Sabrian replied, looking grave. If Livia could bring the mainland powers to heel as well, exact tribute from them?
He shook his head.
My former student has always enjoyed playing the long game.
Well, we've got to get her piece off the board before that happens, Allie said, tossing the apple core into the grass and standing up. Won't matter if it's a Fane or a Kohaya rule in the quad. If Drusus brings that bitch away for her cannon to work again, we'll all be fitted for chains within a year.
She buckled her sword belt around her waist.
We've got to stop Drusus, either by taking his notes or killing him.
We talk to him first, Kerla said, standing up as well, if possible. I'd like proof before committing an assault that will likely be considered an act of war. Captain, if your honor forbids you from raising a weapon against your countrymen, I'll understand, but I'll need your word you will not interfere.
I thank you for the offer, my friend, but I have already pledged myself to your cause, and the Freeze will be no safer for me if Livia controls it.
Grievous's dark eyes sparkled with grim humor as he accepted the extra longsword from Wick.
She has already called me a traitor once.
All right, Kerla said. Where did you last see Drusus?
We were assisting the monks with cataloging the supplies and goods from Midgate before we took a break for dinner.
That's where we'll start looking, Kerla said. Grievous led them away from the preservatory toward the open area between the large building and the gatehouse, where the crates and sacks had been brought. There were still a few monks standing up, counting boxes, but most of the people there were sitting down, eating and resting.
Spread out, Kerla told the others. One Sabrian among a crowd of mainlanders shouldn't be hard to find. But don't confront him. We don't need to get the monks involved in this. Just make one or two passes through the crowd and meet back here.
She plucked Wick's sleeve as Allie and Grievous departed.
Keep an eye out for Jordan as well. We'll need him to get down to the...
She broke off, looking toward the lower portion of the abbey.
Oh, no, she breathed, holding up a hand to stop Wick's question before it began.
A distant roar reached her ears, a unified prayer in the call-and-response rhythm she'd heard so often these days, but she was too far away to hear the call, only the mass response.
Guide our hearts! Take our pain! Give us strength!
Even Wick heard that last shout, his face tightening as the alarm bell from Midgate began to ring.
Here she comes.
And here we go, Kerla said. Now that the battle's begun, all the scholars and children are supposed to go to the infirmary. Do one sweep outside and keep an eye on the entrances to the preservatory. If you see Jordan, don't take your eyes off of him until I find you. Understood?
Understood, mistress, Wick said, snapping off a salute and dashing into the crowd, which was suddenly bristling with activity, everyone scrambling to their feet.
Kerla entered the crowd as well, looking for Grievous and Allie as much as Jordan and Drusus. The crates were grouped by which building they had come from and marked in chalk with more of those shorthand symbols she'd seen in the registry logbooks. She guessed they identified which building they had come from, chapel, dining hall, one of the two dormitories, as well as other smaller buildings she'd never learned the names or purpose of.
Some of these piles towered over her head, artificial islands which the crowd of scholars and monks swirled around. "Can't see a damn thing," she thought, leaping atop one of the crates and climbing the stack until she was well above the crowd and could look over the entire area. Monks were collecting the scholars into groups, preparing to escort them to the infirmary, but her gaze fell upon a cluster of smaller figures, the Abbey's children. Jordan was in the middle of them, counting heads and calling out names. Kerla started to relax, then frowned, seeing two other figures lingering near Jordan's group. Drusus and his apprentice, why aren't they with the other scholars? Casting her gaze around, she spotted Grievous, Allie, and Wick in short order and whistled sharply to get their attention. Pointing in the direction of the children, she leapt off the stack of crates and hit the ground at a run. By the time she got there, Drusus had moved into the group of children and was trying to speak with Jordan. The Duke's son was in the process of lighting small candles and handing them to the older children, who then gathered the younger ones into groups around them. "Remember to hold hands once we get inside," Jordan said to the children, gesturing for Drusus to wait. "Stay with your group until we reach the infirmary." He glanced up as Kerla arrived, looking puzzled as Allie and Wick joined her a moment later, Grievous trotting after them a short distance behind. "Jordan," Kerla said, "I need you to step away from Drusus." "What? He's just asking to come with us to the infirmary," Jordan objected. "He doesn't know the way there."
"Is something wrong?" Drusus asked, acting calm, but Kerla could see concern wrinkling the corners of his eyes.
"That depends on whether or not you finished retracing Trellia's course," she said, watching Drusus's eyes widen behind his spectacles. "Master Drusus, we both know why Livia Mauritius sent you here, and as the left hand of Duke Stephen Kohaya, I cannot allow you to take whatever you've learned back to her. The security of my master's realm is at stake."
She had expected Drusus to argue with her, or show fear at the numbers against him, but instead, the Sabrian gave her a mocking smile.
"What my employer chooses to do with my findings is of no concern to me, creature."
His command of free speech was better than he had let on.
"Likewise, the fate of your master's petty holdings is irrelevant."
"I'll show you irrelevant," Wick snapped, taking a step forward.
No one saw Drusus's apprentice move. One moment he was standing behind the scholar, the next he was in front of him, his cloak falling away from his shoulders, revealing two blades at his belt. Kerla thrust out one arm to hold Wick back as the man gave a short bow, his head raised, his arms crossed in front of him, his hands brushing the unadorned hilts of his argument and retort. Behind Kerla, Grievous hissed in shocked recognition.
"Captain Grievous," the Agenti said in Sabrian, his voice as cool and smooth as ice water, "it is an honor to meet you. I am Titus Satax."
Kerla stared at him, unable to think. She'd seen Teska make this bow. She knew what it meant. She just couldn't understand how she'd failed to recognize the man for what he was. He seemed taller now, radiating a presence of deadly assurance that made him impossible to ignore. Then she blinked, suddenly recognizing the man's name.
"Titus Satax!"
The man's gaze flicked to her, appraising, studying.
"Student of Master Lorenus?"
The glacial calm on the man's face cracked for an instant.
"Who told you?"
Then he paused, looking annoyed.
"Ah, Carrick."
"Sicarius," she corrected him automatically. "His name was Teska Sicarius."
"No," Satax replied, as if she'd just told him 2 and 2 equaled 5.
"That was only what my master called him."
The argument and the retort were in his hands now. She hadn't even noticed him draw the blades.
"We are traveling through the tunnels to leave the abbey," said Satax. "This young man will guide us. You will neither hinder nor follow us. If I see any of you again this night, the boy will die, and then I will kill you."
Wick bristled at that.
"No," Kerla said, pulling on his arm. "There's 4 of us to 1 of him," the guard snarled.
Teska told me this man was the greatest swordsman he'd ever met, Kerla hissed. Stand down!
Satax smiled like a sleepy cat. Did Aiden Karok really say that?
Teska Sicarius said it, she threw back, hearing the scorn in Satax's voice when he spoke of her friend. You can use whatever name for him you please, but I don't give a damn. He knew who he was and who he had once been. He died in service to his master as an Agentes, and the tale of Morellus was told for him.
She added the last on impulse, but she could see that it had some effect on Satax. She just didn't know what that effect was. There was a tightening of the skin around his eyes and a flexing muscle in his jaw, but if he was angry at her daring to speak to him in this way, or if he was feeling regret for his earlier contempt, she couldn't tell. Compared to Titus Satax, Grievous was an open book.
Release Jordan unharmed when you get to the gate, she said, and I will agree to your terms.
These are not terms, Satax replied. I am not negotiating. If I see you again this night, you will see the boy die shortly before I kill you in turn.
He spoke with the sort of confidence one normally reserved for stating that the sun would rise tomorrow. Teska had once told her that display of confidence was another part of Agentes' training. Often a fight could be avoided through a spoken promise of what the Agentes would do to anyone foolish enough to start that fight. The other side of that coin, however, was that an Agentes did not make promises he did not believe with absolute certainty he could complete. That understanding did not make Satax's promise any less compelling.
If you harm him, she grated, I swear.
We both hear the doubt in your voice, Satax interrupted. Do not insult us both with a flawed promise.
He glanced at Grievous.
Captain, my compliments to you. It has truly been an honor to make your acquaintance.
Behind him, Drusus took Jordan by the arm and dragged him toward the door of the preservatory, while Titus glided through the crowd of children, his blades steady. Kerla caught Jordan's eye, and the youth gave her a nervous smile, but his hand trembled, causing his candle to flicker. Drops of pale wax spattered on the ground as he went through the doorway and was gone. Satax gave the group one last look, his face a placid mask before he went inside as well, pulling the door shut behind him. There was a moment's silence before some of the terrified children began to sniffle and cry.
"Daughter's mercy," Allie breathed, the edges of a nervous laugh in her voice. "But that was something."
"An Agentes," Grievous whispered in awe. "I should have realized Livia Mauritius would never have sent Drusus on a mission like this unguarded. Such perfect discipline, hiding in plain sight."
He looked at Kerla.
"To use your term, he fooled the corner of the eye."
"Perfectly," Kerla agreed. "He was always with Drusus, never more than a foot or two away, but half the time I forgot he was even there."
"Well, we won't forget him now," Wick said, looking pale and angry. "But we can't just let him walk off with Jordan, can we?"
"No, we're going to follow, but we'll give them a head start. I have no doubt Satax will kill Jordan if he sees any of us again."
"No doubt," Allie replied, "but how are we going to follow them through this maze if Jordan was the one we needed to guide us?"
Kerla didn't have an answer for that, until her gaze fell on the drops of white wax fallen from Jordan's candle, and she realized that while Jordan had been justifiably afraid, he wasn't the sort to tremble in abject fear.
"Oh, you clever lad," she murmured.
"What was that?" Allie asked.
"I think Jordan's still guiding us," Kerla replied, looking over the children, her gaze falling on Maya, who was trying to comfort some of the younger children around her. "Maya, I need your help. The children still need to get to the infirmary. Do you think you could get them there through another door?"
Maya nodded.
"All right, you should get started, but I'd like to have your candle, if I may."
"Are you going to rescue Jordan?" the girl asked.
"Yes."
"Do you promise?"
Kerla took a deep breath. "I promise."
Hey folks, John here. Just a few quick things to throw in.
First, I hope you liked that little surprise at the end of this episode. I've been waiting to spring Titus Satax on you for a long time now, ever since I started working on Book 2, and I'm curious to hear what you thought of his appearance, and whether I did a good job keeping his identity secret until the big reveal. But I will ask that you hold off making any specific comments on the public forums, such as Left Hand's official Facebook page, just to maintain the surprise for new listeners. You can always reach me through email at john@voicejm.com. You can find that address also on the webpage. Second, I'm throwing my hat in the ring to put this podcast up for a Parsec Award, and I'm going to be putting together a sample of the podcast as part of the submission. And here's where I could use your help. Let me know your favorite scenes from Book 3, examples of good writing or narration that I might focus on when collecting samples for the Parsec judges. Once again, you can send your emails to me at john@voicejm.com. And thanks to those of you who've already sent in some suggestions. They're very much appreciated. Well, 5 episodes to go now, folks. Enjoy the ride. And now, back to our standard legalese. This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.